Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, good to have you with us here today, folks. Thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. Check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. He's got 23 years of experience in the real estate business. Joe is also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, thank you to the Des Moines Irish Session folks for providing our bumper music. And I'm delighted to welcome to the program Reka Basu. Reka, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ed. Thanks for having me on. Good to be here.
And I don't even know if I can go through your resume quickly, but you were a longtime columnist for the Des Moines Register.
That's right.
And now an independent journalist.
Exactly.
Freedom.
I'm writing for Substack. I have a column called Reka Shouts and Whispers on Substack that appears once a week. So, and I still contribute to the Register regularly. Yeah. I wrote one piece in yesterday's paper about puppy mills and how badly we treat our animals in this state.
Puppy mills have been a big issue here.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we're not talking about puppy mills today.
No, not today.
We've got a lot of ground to cover. And I want to start with a column you wrote, a Substack piece, about the disparity between the Republican Party's previous claim to being the party of individual rights, of local control, and the stuff that's now coming out of, you know, state legislatures across the country. But we're going to take a look at what's happening here in Iowa.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, just to quote one thing you said from that story, local control, whether exercised by states against federal dictates or by municipalities over state mandates, used to be a Republican value. Communities have their own identities, and local elections allow people to elect leaders who represent theirs. Yet our governor is trying to impose hers on everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk about some examples.
Well, some examples. For example, for a long time, they have had a law, a policy the state has, that counties cannot impose their own minimum wages. And statewide, Iowa has the most pathetic $7.25 an hour minimum wage, which nobody can live on. It's astounding. But, I mean, it's not good enough that the state does that, but they also, for example, more recently, sanctuary cities, they don't allow a city like Johnston to have, or a county like Johnson County to have sanctuary.
Well, let's back up for a minute. The state legislative ban on cities enacting stronger minimum wage laws than the state level of $7.25 an hour, that came in response to a handful of counties, and some of them were rural counties, establishing a $15 minimum wage requirement. So, you know, here they are, this, you know, what we believe in local control. Let the local people decide. Well, the local people decided something that the Republican Party's corporate sponsors didn't like, and boom, they came in right away and put the kibosh on it.
It's so ironic, Ed. The whole notion of big government, which was what fueled this local control movement, was all about, you know, governments shouldn't dictate to you what you do. Instead, actually, we've become a complete autocracy in the United States anyway, where it's not even federal law that Trump is following. He's just going out and doing his own thing without anybody's approval, right?
Yeah.
So we've almost come full cycle.
And let's talk about that too. But I want to. You started mentioning sanctuary cities.
Yeah.
Tell us more about what's been happening on that level here at Iowa. Because again, it's happening elsewhere in the country.
Yes, there is some conflict in Iowa about that. There have been sanctuary cities in the past, and now they're saying no to that. And that means, of course, to protect undocumented immigrants from ICE. The state has tried to make some deals with the federal government, with ICE, where Local prisons, local jails will collaborate with ICE to hold the undocumented people, or documented people, we never really know if these are legitimate roundups of undocumented immigrants, right, in their facilities. And actually, there's one county in Iowa, which one is it, that is refusing to even allow any information about how many people they have or how they, I was just reading about it this morning.
And I'm blanking out which county it is as well.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. But that's the deal, that we don't know who's collaborating with ICE and who isn't. But certainly in a county like Johnson County, they are saying, get out of here, ICE. You don't belong here.
But historically, the thinking is that county governments, city governments, have enough responsibilities just to manage law enforcement issues at the local level.
Exactly.
They have limited budgets, and sometimes, that's another issue, the state government puts limitations on how much they can actually collect in terms of revenue.
Right.
And so on top of that, you've got the federal government coming and saying, hey, we want you to do this for us.
Right.
We want you to do some of our work as well.
Exactly. And here's another thing. As far as this local control issue goes, the state has been opposed to citizen review boards to review the conduct of police officers
right.
and their jobs. And now they've made that, again, one of these local, anti-local control rules where you can't have them as a county or as a city either. So if there's a Des Moines police officer who's making an untoward arrest during, for example, the Black Lives Matter rallies, they're above the law in the sense that no local control board, civilian review board, is able to review what they did and decide if it was appropriate or not.
And there was a big discussion in Des Moines about that years ago.
Yes, there was.
And locally there was, I mean, I can't remember, it goes way back actually, and I can't remember, it goes back so far, I can't remember how we settled it. Whether we established a citizen review board or not. I don't think we did.
It was so actually, I came here in the early 90s to work for the Register, right? And it was an issue back then. And it never got resolved. It kept coming up and people would boycott and march and rally and be dragged out of city council meetings and things like that. But they just never went for it. So.
But the bottom line is, you know, that was our community's responsibility. That was the residents of Des Moines. If they didn't like what the city council was doing on that issue, whether they wanted a city police citizen review board or not, they could vote their council members out. They could vote people in.
Exactly.
But there's another example of lost control
Absolutely.
Going to a higher level, a so-called higher level of authority that is basically just ruling by, well, we don't like this, so even though we say we're for local control, we're going to just take this initiative to squash it.
Absolutely. And then there's another thing. Sometimes city councils really do not live up to the expectations of them, which is to be balanced in these issues. So recently a case came before the Des Moines City Council where somebody was appointed to a local board commission. And there is supposed to, even though the Governor Reynolds, took away representation or gender requirements from statewide boards and commissions, Des Moines had maintained its, right? But still Joe Gatto, actually one of the council members, brought in someone who was a man and there was not gender balance and the council voted on it and only two people, and they both happened to be men, voted against requiring representation by gender. So, you know, what is that? Where does that go? But, you know, on the other hand, I would say that Iowa has the, Republicans have the trifecta of power in Iowa, right? Just
at the federal level, right? Yeah.
And so they are picking at those counties and cities which they perceive as being Democratic-led blue ones, right? Mm. To go after them for things like DEI, anti-DEI legislation. Mm. You know, they're barred from doing that. It's not good enough that you can't have it at the college level, you can't have it in professions. But now counties can't use DEI either.
But you know, back to the issue of raising the minimum wage.
Yeah.
Some of the counties that voted on their own to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour are, you know, counties that have a strong history of labor representation, manufacturing base, but they're counties that tend to vote Republican, actually pretty strongly. So, you know, the Republican legislature and the governor aren't just hurting, quote, their base.
Right.
Hurting, quote, their opposition, meaning so-called blue counties.
Right.
They're hurting their own representatives in counties that have tended to vote Republican.
And their standard argument is nobody actually earns only the minimum wage. These are high school students who, you know, get a job after school or during their summer breaks, but nobody's trying to make a living and feed their family on it. And that's actually rubbish. People are.
Yeah, I mean, we have a, I mean, if they believe that, then they should propose a bill to do away with the minimum wage completely. I probably shouldn't say that. It might happen, right?
Please don't say that. Strike that.
All right. Sometimes they'll do something that I actually personally like, even though I disagree with it philosophically. For example, banning fireworks. Mm. You're not allowed to have fireworks before July 4th, and you're not allowed to have them on New Year's Eve, I believe, as well.
Right, New Year's Eve, except that you can't. I mean, you as a county, you can't ban that, right? You cannot ban that as a county. You have to have them.
Oh, yeah. It prevents them from banning it, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
No, this is like arms. And, you know, now there's this new piece of legislation that made it through, and we'll talk about Funnel Week legislation coming up, but that any adult who's picking up a child at school in Iowa can have a loaded weapon in their car. What on earth? Yeah. Why is that necessary? Who's pushing for these kinds of bills?
Well, the same people who are pushing for people on the political left not to have guns at protests.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Good point.
Hey, so a good segue to what's going on at the state level right now in terms of we have something in Iowa. I think other states have something similar called Funnel Week.
Right.
Bills have to make it through a committee by a certain date or they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the bills that didn't make it through, it's like, well, thank God for that.
Thank God.
But some of them are still pretty crazy.
I know.
I mean,
well, one that didn't make it was doing away with abortion altogether. Any kind
criminalizing
of abortion.
It.
Not just criminalizing it. Right. I mean, doctors could go to jail for life. To prison for life or 20 years or something
along
those lines.
And weren't there also potentially criminal penalties for the mother?
No, I don't think. I didn't read about
criminal penalties. I've heard that discussed before.
That has been discussed previously when they were doing the 6-week abortion ban, which is in place. But I don't think that that was part of this bill. But thank goodness that did not advance.
Yeah. So speaking of schools, you know, again, it's been up to local school districts to decide, you know, what their immunization policy is. Mm. And now the state is going to preempt that and basically say you cannot require these immunizations.
Exactly.
Even though we have this measles outbreak.
Yep.
Even though there's concern about the return of polio.
It's terrifying. I find it absolutely terrifying that they would go that far.
And I don't know if we disagree or agree on this, but I'm not strictly pro all vaccinations. I never get a flu shot. I think that should be optional.
And what about COVID?
I did. I don't think I really needed to. We can have a long conversation about that.
Okay.
But I don't think it makes any sense for the state to come in and say, hey, you got to do it this way. If we believe that counties and cities and, you know, township trustees and school boards have some autonomy, then we need to let them make their own rules.
Exactly. And this comes on the heels of, during COVID, the governor having insisted that kids go to school in person much earlier than some school district superintendents were ready for or anyone was ready for. And yet they're not allowed to mandate vaccines. So, I mean, that just sets children up for a great deal of sickness. And I think it's just so counterintuitive. What's the point?
It's counter-scientific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Counter-scientific, counter-intuitive. Some of it thanks to RFK Jr. Some of it...
And, you know, some of what RFK Jr. talks about, I like.
Yeah, like what?
Getting dyes out of food.
That he what?
Getting commercial dyes out of
food.
Oh,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Eating... I'm not sure I like his definition of eating healthy. According to a recent quote, he said he eats meat and ferments. I don't know what that means even.
Ferment? Does he eat, say, raccoons or?
Pickles.
Oh,
I guess. I don't know. Pickles,
there seems
joke.
To be this big pickle craze going on in the country.
But I mean, I think overall the focus on healthy, natural food is good, but some of this stuff is just off the wall.
Absolutely.
Speaking of off the wall,
yes.
Why beat up on libraries?
Oh,
I mean,
there's
a bill in Iowa right now, and there may be similar bills elsewhere.
It passed the funnel, or so far anyway, the first funnel.
You can't have a bookmobile show up from the library to a school.
No, because there might be sex in it, and that would expose children to sex. And, you know, it used to be that children could not be exposed to library books just in public schools from ages from kindergarten through sixth grade. Now they're extending that all the way through high school, all the way through 12th grade. And public libraries would not be able to have that fare in case, and kids could not get a card that would be used in a public library if they're of school-going age.
Yeah, so what the what? I mean,
how did we manage that as children, right? I mean, my parents had some novels.
Well, look at how messed up we are.
Yeah, exactly. No,
I'm kidding.
Grandmother of two, mother of two.
No. I wouldn't even say how many I'm the grandfather of. Anyway.
Oh my,
yeah. Exactly. So yeah, I mean this. Again, this. I remember Jan Michelson, a right wing talk show host here in Iowa. He used to rage against libraries as quote welfare bookstores. At the same time, he would rage against the nanny state. How is this not the nanny state?
It's totally the nanny state, spying on everything you do,
and taking away any authority that any local jurisdiction, duly elected local jurisdiction, has.
Exactly.
Another one we might want to mention. There's so much we could talk about, but. The requirement that abortion medications like mifepristone be administered in person.
Can't be ordered by mail.
Who does that hurt?
I mean,
rural Iowa.
Yeah.
It hurts rural
Iowa.
Exactly,
exactly. And if we're speaking about hurting rural Iowa, there's a whole other one about that just passed the funnel also about doctors and engineers practicing in rural parts of the state have to be citizens. You have to be a citizen of the United States. And there's a great shortage of healthcare workers around the state. It's just the state shooting itself in the foot.
I wasn't even aware of that, Bill. Yeah. Has that made it through the funnel?
Yep,
Oh, gosh.
It did.
Okay.
And there was some really good testimony from legislator Megan Srinivas, who is a doctor herself. And she's on the
judiciary. From India originally? Or her family is? Her family is
her
from India?
Her family is from India.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. And her parents are engineers, and she's a doctor, and they also do the same thing to engineers. You have to be a citizen. It's just all rhetoric.
Maybe eventually, be
shameful.
if you're first or second generation, you know, maybe you and I would be disqualified. You by virtue of your Indian heritage, me by virtue of my Irish heritage.
Right, disqualified from being a doctor.
Journalist.
Luckily, I never aspired to be a doctor or an engineer because I couldn't have.
Hey, we got to take a short break. Reka's going to be with me for the rest of the program here, or most of it, at any rate. We're going to talk about how all this stuff might play out in terms of influencing the MAGA coalition and what that means for the for the foreseeable future. Back in a minute with you on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Ed Fallon with you, folks. Hey, thanks again to our sponsors and our partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry. CPM promotes peaceful resolution to war and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, Reka Basu with me today, folks. Hey, Reka, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here, Ed.
So I want to share, you know, a lot of us are very concerned about where our country is heading. Mm. And in fact, some of my best friends are deciding to head out of the country. They're so upset the way things are going.
Yep.
They're leaving.
Yep.
I wish they wouldn't, because I feel things are changing. And here's a couple examples. A friend of mine who had voted for Trump 3 times wrote to me recently, "I base my support for Trump on what he said, and he is clearly doing the opposite with the full-throated support of the cult which follows him. It used to be, quote, 'We're for a balanced budget.' Now it's 'The big, beautiful bill will save America.' It used to be, 'You can have a gun when you can have my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead hands.' And now it's, 'People should know better than to go around armed to a protest.' It used to be, 'Keep government out of our personal business,' to 'Armed, fast, federal thugs are the way to true liberty.'" Mm. So, you know, this is just one Trump supporter having, major buyer's remorse. Here's another one. You know Robert Reich, the former U.S. Mm-hmm. Department of Commerce Secretary.
He's become a Trumpster?
No, not at all. He's he writes once or twice a day, in fact.
He's on fire.
He is on fire, yes. In a recent column, Reich, he wrote about a chance encounter he had with a stranger in a cafe. I think it might have been up in New Hampshire. The guy came up to him and said, "I've been a lifelong Republican, but the events of the past weeks have caused me to leave the Republican Party." And Reich says, "I'm happy to hear that." And then he kind of turned to finish his breakfast. The guy continued, "I'm from New Hampshire, and many of my Republican friends are leaving the party, too." He said, "Minneapolis was the last straw." And Reich says, "I put down my fork, and I turned toward him again. 'I assume you're talking about the behavior of ICE and Border Patrol agents there and the killings?'"
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, quote, "All terrible, of course, but what really finished me were the lies. Noam, Miller, Bovino, Vance, Trump. They all lie through their teeth. I saw the video. They're a pack of liars."
Mm.
So, and then, of course, my favorite politician, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Mm. For many years, I believe.
No. Bailed ship. Yeah. And I think the fracture in the MAGA base is becoming bigger than a fracture. And I think it's going to point to, I think the way things are going, it's just going to keep getting bigger.
Well,
am I overly optimistic?
I mean, from where I sit, you are very optimistic. I would love to believe that that's true. But most of the Republicans that we hear from are unwilling, because they're in office at one level or another,
right,
at state, local, or federal level. They really feel like they have to kiss up to Trump and abide by everything he says, because he will call them out, or he will primary someone against them in ways that, by the way, Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa has done,
she
too.
She has done, and she has done it successfully.
When she did not like,
exactly,
a position on vouchers, school vouchers, for example.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I worry a lot about people who are in office, but I do think there have been certain issues that have woken up his MAGA base, and one of those is the Epstein files and wanting to get to...
One of many examples.
One of many, absolutely.
So you're saying the Trump MAGA base is now woke?
Is now woke. I think some of them are waking up. I think some of them are waking up. But I have noticed in my own neighborhood and in various neighborhoods around Des Moines, there are a lot of groups forming, a number of them, by the way, led by women, that want to challenge Trump and get people to stop voting for Trump and start the narrative about it. And I went to a meeting just over the weekend to hear some of what they were saying. And I said, you know, it's all about personal stories. What is the narrative that you use with a Trump supporter? What is the most successful narrative? What would you say is?
For me, it's pretty diverse. I mean, I did my 220-mile walk around Iowa there back in October.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd met a lot of farmers. They were concerned about the impact of tariffs,
mm-hmm.
About the cost, about the $40 billion bailout to Argentina, allowing China to buy those soybeans at a reduced cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that made no sense to them. But there were other arguments that really ticked people off as well. There was one guy, he says, "I don't understand why we're spending all this money to send the federal police to Portland." You know,
mm-hmm.
Another guy who was really upset at the demolition of the East Wing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But so it's not just one thing. And of course, now there's the MAHA moms, the Make America Healthy Again. Not just moms, but the moms are kind of the most visual
mm-hmm.
part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're real upset at President Trump over his support for a chemical based on glyphosate, which, I mean, part of that movement is anti-chemical, anti-artificial dyes. And now they're seeing that this the guy that they got behind, Trump, is just going in the opposite direction.
That's interesting. No, I agree. There are different ways in which people, for example, Trump came across as a real isolationist when it came to foreign policy, right? He wasn't going to go into other countries, and now there's no country he doesn't want to go into or penalize in some way or other. Iran, for example, or, I mean...
Denmark,
but not Canada. In the places where he really should be taking some action to try to defeat genocide. He's not doing that, and instead he's importing Afrikaners here while telling people on temporary visas from Afghanistan to go back, for example. He's jumped on that bandwagon, and I think some people are really uncomfortable with having wars, us declaring unilateral wars on other countries where we really have no business being and where it's not of any benefit to us. And sometimes I think he's just trying to change the subject from his own domestic policies.
Or from the Epstein files.
Or from the Epstein files, exactly.
There was a quote in The Hill about foreign policy that I thought was interesting. It said that Trump's attack on Iran last summer, his decision to float the possibility of regime change there, following a number of U.S. strikes on its nuclear facilities, has caused a new rupture across the mega universe. That was last summer. And I can't believe that rupture isn't getting more severe as Trump, prepares probably to do something in Iran again.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
With all the military, equipment harnessed in and around Iran, it's hard to imagine that it's just a matter of time before he's going to do something.
Where does it stop? You know, something that I found very interesting is... Project 2025, right, which was put out by the Heritage Foundation or Heritage Institute, was supposed to be the blueprint for Trump's term. And I was reading it the other day, all, I don't know how many thousands of pages, so it is really, really thick volume. And I found there, Maduro is in there, right? Nabbing Maduro is in there. Whoever would have thought of doing such a thing? It seemed when he's shooting all those people from the sky and whatnot. And also in there was something correlated to a local bill that was proposed in Iowa, which was about making marriages harder to get out of. Like when you say give your wedding oaths when you're getting married, you can also add a proviso that says I'll never get divorced, you know, unless something absolutely heinous happens.
So complicating the no-fault divorce, which, by the way, did not
pass the funnel, thank goodness, because that was proposed. But that's in there too, making the family, you know, boundless numbers of children, a mother who stays home. It's just trying to turn America backwards, and it can all be found in there. So a lot of these things that are happening are not even original thoughts, not just on the part of Iowa, but on the part of the federal government.
Well, I think the far right was taken by surprise by Trump's victory in 2016, but they had 4 years, well, 8 years really, to prepare for how they would govern in the next Trump administration, or it wasn't Trump, somebody else who was equally extreme, and Project 2025 lays out the plan, and he's following it.
So, who would you say, Ed? What defines a hardcore Trump supporter going forward now?
Again, there's not one single thing. You can be brought into that universe because you thought he would be more of an isolationist president, and let's admit it. You know, Democrats have done a lousy job at foreign policy as well. So yeah, if you're tired of seeing regime change wars, maybe there was an appeal there, and maybe because of the alliance that Trump made with RF Kennedy Jr., you were brought in because you thought, well, maybe there's going to finally be some crackdown on big corporate food monopolies that poison us with glyphosate and with dyes in our foods and whatnot. Maybe it was abortion. You know, I know one very nice guy who is he knows Trump is a horrible person, but his big issue is abortion, and so he's just, I got to support him because he got done what I needed to be done in my mind, in his mind, on abortion. You know, and that's a really narrow agenda.
No, I mean, those are actually traditional Republican issues, right? Lower taxes, and then not necessarily healthy food, but anti-abortion. And yet, look at Trump's behavior. Look at the lawsuit that was settled against him for harassing women, sexually harassing women. Look at all of the women who are lined up. Look at the Epstein files. How does someone who is so anti-abortion, I assume in a lot of cases because of religious or spiritual reasons, how do people justify that kind of behavior?
You know, I can't explain that, and I don't bother to push people on that. I'm just encouraged when I see people saying, well, maybe this isn't really what I wanted to vote for.
I think one of a big aspect of Trump's appeal, frankly, was this anti-immigration movement.
Probably.
And
yeah,
I think that's
unfortunate.
That is very unfortunate because he's made this big case as to how he's going after these hardened criminals and murderers and gangsters and so on. And these people are not that. The people who are being rounded up in cities, for the most part,
70-something percent have no criminal record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
those
horrible facilities like Alligator, Alcatraz that was built, you know, that was just demeaning and degrading and people in pens. But yes, I think that still in this country, there is this sense that, you know, they're coming in here and taking our jobs. And what Trump is more insidiously trying to do is instill the fear of otherness. You know, they come from these cultures like they're eating the dogs and the cats. The cats and,
Haitians.
In Springfield. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
That stuff. So it's very insidious.
And that's an age-old tactic, divide and conquer. Mm. Create an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It was done in India.
Mm-hmm.
Divided the Hindus and Muslims. It was done in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
It's an age-old tactic.
Yeah.
And when you really look at it, the enemy you're being proposed to dislike or hate even, it really has a lot more in common with you than the person who's pushing that scenario on you.
Well, not only that, you need those enemies. You need those people to drive your trucks like the Six do across America, you know? And you need those people to be your doctors in small towns and your engineers and things. But he's really making it about the kinds of stereotypes that he throws around about foreigners are really racist and hurtful to a lot of populations.
And it is unfortunate that appeals to some people. But, you know, I think it would have less appeal if Democrats had actually done what needed to be done on immigration. Now, to his credit, President Biden tried to take a more comprehensive approach and a bipartisan approach, and he had Republicans supporting it. And then Trump said, no, vote that down because I want to use this as a campaign issue.
As a campaign issue.
It was shameless, but it was effective.
Yep.
I would hope that people would see through that right there.
Absolutely. But do they see that it was Republicans who blocked it, who blocked, you know, reform on immigration?
And not even Republicans. Again, there were Republicans in the House and Senate who were willing to go along with a compromise. It wasn't perfect, but it was a big step forward.
Mm-hmm.
It was Trump that killed it.
Totally
for personal and political reasons.
Because he has such enormous power everywhere, over everything.
And I think that's waning. And we got to take a short break, Rekha. And when we come back, let's talk about what does the election scenario look like this coming year? Both in terms of election security, but also in terms of possible outcomes, given the way things are heading. All right?
Absolutely.
Folks, Ed Fallon with you here. Rekha Basu, my guest today. We'll be back in a minute with more conversation on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Family Forum. Thanks for joining us, folks. And thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. Hey, Rick Abasa with me today, folks. Ed Fallon with you here, and we've been talking all kinds of matters relevant to legislation, the appropriate role of state to local government, the federal government to local government, and how this is affecting the MAGA base and how it might affect the upcoming election. Mm. You know, Rick, I think it's really impossible to say exactly how this is all going to play out, mm-hmm. but I think we're seeing some signs.
Yeah,
I think
good
one
signs.
Of those. Well, good signs, but also some very disturbing signs. I mean, what happened in Fulton County, Georgia, last month, where Tulsi Gabbard mysteriously showed up with a bunch of FBI agents, I believe, to make off with 700 boxes of election material from the 2020 election. Mm. Again, Trump insisting that the election was stolen in Georgia, and he's going to try to find a way to prove that. Mm. I'm sure that's going to involve a lot of redaction.
Get over it, dude. I mean,
That, on top of that, there are now 24 states that have been sued by the federal government because the Trump administration insists that they must turn over their election, their voter rolls, their complete voter rolls.
That's ridiculous.
It's not the role of the federal government.
No.
And the fact that they're being sued, I mean, to me, it was very telltale that the Trump administration said to Minnesota, look, we'll pull back a lot of our agents, our law enforcement, ICE agents and whatnot, if you just give us your voter rolls.
I mean, so,
what's the connection?
And also, what is the end game here? What would they do with those voter rolls? Just purge some people from there because they were...
I think they certainly would. They would find lots of reasons to purge. If you got
because
a vowel,
they would look up their backgrounds and see if they'd had a DUI or.
Or if you got a vowel at the end of your name, Ms. Basu, you know, they would automatically flag you as somebody they might want to remove. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean.
And then, of course, there are other provisions like this one about name changes, right? If you
sure.
are a woman, typically, who has gotten married and changed her name, then you won't be able, if you show up with ID that shows your new name, then you're stricken, right?
Yeah, the Safeguard America Voter Eligibility Act. They've always got great names.
Mm.
Yeah, but again, the goal clearly is to disenfranchise a lot of voters. Because if you've got to produce a birth certificate or a passport, I know where one of those two things is.
Yep.
I don't know where one. The other one, I'm not sure.
Right.
But not everybody can do that.
Exactly. And actually, that relates to another bill that the that was going to become a bar on what county government can do in Iowa. I don't know whether it passed the first funnel or not, but it was that communities, counties cannot issue county IDs.
Right? Yeah.
To people?
I think that's still a live round, I believe.
Is it still alive? Okay.
Yeah.
And so what that would do is in conditions where people don't have a driver's license, like say you're a senior citizen, you don't have a driver's license, or you're someone who's homeless and you don't have a street address to get one with. I mean, a lot of people who are legitimate citizens could be affected by this ID problem.
Yeah. And the University of Maryland did a study about the potential impact of that legislation or that that bill.
Yeah.
And found that 21 million eligible voters, people who are currently eligible, could be dislodged from the voting rolls. Yeah. And I haven't studied their method of how they came up with that. But the University of Maryland is a credible source of information, and that's a lot of people
it's
to
where
suddenly
my daughter-in-law
be disenfranchised.
Teaches, so yes, it is.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Teaches law there.
All right. Good. Yeah. And you know, just to give you an idea of what you know, this is not about illegal people voting.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, what 8.2 million people voted in Georgia in the last election? Do you want to guess what percentage of them were illegal voters?
2%?
Close. 0.0002.
In other words, not close at all. You had the two right.
Points,
yeah.
Right.
So oh my God. 20 voters out of 8.2 million were ineligible, should not have voted. 20
Good.
Out of 8.2 million. This is not a problem.
Good.
This is a rounding error.
It is not a problem.
Yeah.
It's not a problem at all. It's outrageous.
So, I mean, it's, you know, some other examples of people who might be, you mentioned married, you know, women.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I have a, I know people who, the man changed their name to the woman. So it could affect the man
okay.
that way as well.
Good to know.
But, you know, what about people who have lost their documents in a flood or
a fire.
Or,
mm-hmm.
or you know, and they haven't had the time or even the capacity to go through the process of getting those replaced.
And
you know?
Quite frankly, I think we have a much bigger problem in this country of people, not Americans, not voting, not showing up to
yeah.
vote, right, than people racing to the polls who don't have legitimate right to do so.
Well,
it's just not an issue.
So I'm curious about your thoughts on the conversation about gerrymandering, which, again, remember how that got started, folks. Donald Trump basically ordered Governor Abbott in Texas. He says, I want you to go out and find, you know, find more Republican districts.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, lo and behold, he did. He did a, you know, usually redistricting, the census is done every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
This was 5 years, and then they created, gerrymandered five
mm-hmm.
new districts.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, now we've seen that happening in California.
Right, on the
other
side.
A lot of other places.
So,
and
Gavin Newsom to the rescue.
To the rescue, sort of, yeah. Which is really unfortunate, because to have districts that are so lopsided that they really are only going to go one way.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a fair representation of the electorate.
It's absolutely not a fair representation. It's just trying to build up the Republican Party base, and it's not doing it legitimately.
Or the Democratic Party base.
Depends on who's in office. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The Democrats could do it just as easily when they're in office.
So we have 435 congressional districts in the U.S. Do you want to guess how many are considered toss-ups?
Out of 435, how many are toss-ups? Oh, my gosh.
I'm walking on some numbers here, Rake. I apologize.
Yeah. No, that's okay, because I was so hopelessly off in the last
mathematical equation. You had the two right.
I had the number two right. Okay. Toss-ups. Let's just say 220.
18.
18 are toss-ups.
18 are toss-ups. That's how bad gerrymandering has happened. I mean, not just in Texas. I mean, Democratic states as well. Maryland is pretty nastily... Is that a word? You're a journalist. Nastily gerrymandered.
It can squeak by.
All right. You know, I don't like to brag about Iowa too often, because there's not a lot to brag about here recently.
No, not lately.
One thing we have going for us is a very fair districting system. And if you look at the state, it's kind of divided into four blocks.
Mm-hmm.
There are no crazy amoeba-shaped things.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, we used to have three Democratic districts.
Yeah.
Now we have four Republican districts.
It's ridiculous.
But there are three districts that could easily go Democrat this time.
Which ones?
Well, the two that are, of the 18 districts that are identified nationwide by mm-hmm. the Cook Political Report,
yeah,
two of those 18 districts are in Iowa.
Are in Iowa.
Iowa 1 and 3. That's the southwest and southeast corner. But the northeast corner is also pretty marginal.
But nothing in the northwest.
No, the northwest, that is going to be solid
that's
Republican
red.
Until
yeah,
the cows come home. And the cows are coming home.
Yeah.
I promise you, they'll be home.
Yeah, they will.
I'm speaking as a farmer here. No,
yeah.
No. I think there's a few other places in the country where you've got these districts that that are fair.
Mm-hmm.
They're not gerrymandered, and they're going to be interesting. But, at least I say two, half or maybe 75% of the districts in Iowa are up for grabs.
That would be incredible.
And if you had fair districting across the country,
yeah.
you could see that in a lot more cases. And again, it's not just benefiting Democrats. Because
mm-hmm.
again, three of those districts used to be Democrat, and now they're Republican. But the fact that they're competitive means they could go back the other way.
Well, that's going to be very interesting. I'm also very interested to see what's going to happen with the U.S. Supreme Court, frankly, on some of these issues.
Yeah.
When something gets to the court, is it going to react now more boldly after it seemed the way it was dissed on this whole thing about tariffs? I mean, he just called them out practically by name, saying they were shameful. And these are people that Trump appointed.
Didn't he say they were a disgrace to their families, too?
To their families, their grandchildren, their whoever. But I think this might embolden them enough to do it again, you know, to rule against him again.
There's a really good column by Elliot Morris about the perception that the public has of the Supreme Court, even though the Supreme Court is pretty lopsided right now.
Yes.
Compared to Congress, compared to the administration, compared to the executive branch, the Supreme Court is generally regarded a little more favorably.
Mm.
Well, a lot more favorably than Congress. But, you know, so here is Trump taken after the Supreme Court, who ruled against his position on tariffs,
mm-hmm.
which most people don't like either.
Right.
So
right.
Morris argues that, you know, that Trump had an out here.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court negated his tariff policy. He could have said, oh, well. But no, instead, he blasts the Supreme Court, like you noted.
Mm-hmm.
And what does he do? He puts more tariffs in place.
10%, 15%.
To heck with the Supreme Court. We're going to do these tariffs anyhow.
Exactly. And there's some little nuance in how he can get away with this. It has to be investigated, so he can only do it like conditionally until it passes muster with, you know, whatever.
Right. You know, and then there'll be another lawsuit, right. And it'll go against him again. I mean,
and it'll go back to the Supreme Court.
But the public is getting tired of this.
I think so. I think if nothing else, the public is just exhausted by every day more stuff being thrown out that really rocks your world. I mean, big,
yes.
big stuff. And it's just too much. You know, give me a boring, bland president any day over this one.
Well, is that a reference to Joe Biden?
We won't name any names. I was thinking Jimmy Carter. But
okay. I like Jimmy Carter.
I know, yeah. I liked him too.
Anyway, you know, so... Here's another question. I mean, I'm very frequently vocally critical of the Democratic Party as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now the Democratic Party is clearly on the ascent, and Trump's base in the Republican Party, the mega universe, is just starting to have buyer's remorse in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
But is there an opening here for other parties? I mean, the Forward Party, founded by Andrew Yang and Christine Todd Whitman. I don't know if you're familiar with the Forward Party.
Not very much.
Yeah.
I mean,
I get their emails. They do back candidates. They've had some success.
They're more on the libertarian side. Is that right?
There is a libertarian element, but mm-hmm. I would say they're more of the fiscal conservative and socially liberal side.
Mm. Okay.
You know, they're a little harder to peg, but... But the whole notion behind their motto, forward, is like not left, not right, but forward.
Mm.
You know, it's cute.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, you know? Yeah.
I mean, the Libertarian Party's been around for a long time, and they continue to do very little in terms of having any kind of a big impact. Even less so is the Green Party.
Right, and I think unless we get significant campaign finance reform, you know, it's going to be very difficult for a third party to raise the kind of money that is required in a major national competition. It's really, really hard. And the Supreme Court made it worse.
Yeah, with Citizens United.
With Citizens United.
And
exactly.
I would say even more critical than that is establishing incident, what used to be called incident runoff voting, now it's called ranked choice voting, which is being used in a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you get to say, okay, I'm going to go with a candidate that I don't think has a chance, but they're my best choice. I'm going to go with them, and then I'm going to go with this other candidate, and maybe a third candidate.
And do you think that gives independent or new smaller parties more of a choice?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think those kind of reforms, what you mentioned, campaign finance, ranked choice voting, would have to be accompanied by some other modifications that would really eventually, I think hopefully, lead to a more parliamentary system of government.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this may be a good time to have that conversation, given the dissatisfaction that most people have with the Democratic Party.
That's true.
And the increasing, you know, shock that people have with what the Republican Party under Trump is doing.
It's definitely a good conversation to have, but I think the timing is very risky, actually. If for those Democrats who want to see Trump out of office and Republicans out of office, if you throw in a third party into the mix, it could really skew the race in to three different directions, and that's, you know... that is a scary prospect. I think the main goal has to be, for me anyway, from my perspective, to get Trump and his MAGA base to not hold office and not control. Because you can't be a Republican politician anymore and be serving in Congress or in a governor's office and not support Trump, and at least say you support Trump.
Well, it looks like all the candidates that he endorses in primaries win.
Mm-hmm.
And even once he endorses a candidate, the others drop out.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
yeah.
That's
so
way
that
more.
Tell you? Yeah.
Well, no one politician should have that level of dominance
in
a party.
Absolutely not. But people are terrified of him. It's dictatorship.
Yeah.
It's bad. I hate to end on a bad note. Maybe we could say something hopeful.
Go for it.
The Supreme Court ruling. The Supreme Court ruling was a triumph. And also, I see so many different, as I mentioned before, so many groups organizing to challenge what is going on in various different ways, holding rallies and forums. And there's that big, big one coming, No Kings, coming up March 6th, I think.
Yeah. So, another No Kings rally.
Another No Kings rally, exactly.
Because the king is still here.
Yeah, the king is indeed here. Well, there's another monarch who's losing some of his power, but that's in the UK.
That's in England, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, thanks to it.
But it's interesting how England takes this Epstein stuff so much more seriously than we do in the US,
There are a bunch of heads rolling over there.
Yes, there are.
Yeah. And there are some heads rolling here, but not President Trump, who presumably is in those Epstein files quite a lot.
Yes, that's what we have been told, and I'm pretty sure that's true.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think as somebody who believes in a constitutional republic where balance and checks and balances are important, I like the fact that the courts are showing some backbone, some independence.
Yes.
I like that. To some extent, there are corporations and universities and people who are speaking out and trying to hold their elected officials accountable.
Absolutely.
Those are all encouraging signs to me. So where this goes, I don't know. But I do think that the Trump administration is going to pull no punches in terms of trying to make sure the elections go its way.
Yeah, and I also think to bring this back locally, the way we started and talk about Iowa, is that some of the proposed legislation now that has made it through the funnel is going to prevent the governor from having so much authority over who gets appointed to particular positions, whether it's the Board of Regents or the State Education Board or whatever.
Yeah.
Because there is a fear. I think there is a fear in Iowa among Republicans that a Democrat is going to win the governor's race.
Yeah, right. Yep, could happen. Who knows? Rekha, thank you so much for joining us, folks. Rekha Basu has been my guest. This is Ed Fallon. When we come back from a short break, Kathy's going to join me. We're going to talk about another piece of state legislation that I think it's happening here in Iowa, might be happening elsewhere. A cottage foods proposal that has been drawing mixed reactions. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design build services for high performance, low maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Hey, Kathy Burns is with me in the studio, and we are talking about another piece of legislation that's been moving through the Iowa legislature. And again, there may be companion bills in your state. This is a bill dealing with cottage foods. It also covers raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's trying to make it easier for people to sell stuff they raise or make at home.
Mm-hmm. Kind of an enhancement of the farm-to-table scene, but it's a mixed bag, and there are mixed reactions to the proposed bill.
And it would expand. I mean, maybe the most controversial component is the raw milk part of it.
I think that's the most controversial one, but there's also a lot to think about when you start to create a new event permit for farm-to-table meals, when you are thinking of allowing cottage foods to be sold in grocery stores. And one legislator pointed out that once you have it sold in a store, it's no longer technically a cottage food, which can be described in different ways.
How do we define cottage food?
Well, Merriam-Webster defines cottage industries as an industry whose labor force consists of family units or individuals working at home with their own equipment, or a small and often informally organized industry, which is very vague.
Okay.
In the Iowa Capital Dispatch article on this particular bill that made it through the funnel, Cammie Coons writes that cottage foods, or foods that are prepared in a private residence and delivered directly to consumers, are exempt from state licensing, permitting, inspection, packaging, and labeling laws under current code. So the first part of that is her definition of cottage food.
So it's when they find their way into a store or some kind of a marketplace.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of a point of controversy in the bill.
So what is the rationale? What are we trying to accomplish here? What do the bill's sponsors think?
Well, according to Representative Chad Ingalls from Randalia, in the county of
Fayette
County, he said it's a way to give easier access to farmers who want to hold farm-to-table events and allow raw milk producers to sell their milk at farm stores.
What's a farm store?
Well, it didn't really define that. Currently, farmers, producers, dairy producers can sell raw milk on site at their farm, but the hitch is whether they can have that same product for sale at their own farm store, which I guess might not always exist on the farm. I think the technicality is that once you use the word store, you automatically, and for very good reason, involve a lot of inspections and licensing and sanitation and overview. Because if you're going to sell things in stores, you should have to meet some standards.
No, I saw that one of the other bill sponsors, Shannon Latham from Sheffield up there in Franklin County, says that the bill is about agritourism. How is that?
That's getting to be a bigger thing, and people who want the more country farm experience, and in our urban farm here, people aren't going to get a country experience, but they'll certainly get an urban farm experience.
Get a vegetable experience.
If you think about the Wallace Farms, for instance, and people go to Wallace Farms to see how the farm works and have a meal and kind of get their hands-on experience with.
And that's out in the country, about an hour southwest of Des Moines. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with it, yeah. So I imagine there's getting enough discussion about this bill that there's groups registered on both sides of it.
Well, the main group speaking out with reservations about the group is the Iowa Environmental Health Association. That, of course, is basically the state health inspectors, the folks whose job it is to regulate what the safety levels are and what's permissible to be advertised and sold as food in Iowa. They are especially opposed to any language that allows the sale of raw milk outside of on-farm sales. And per the CDC, unpasteurized milk can expose individuals to salmonella, brucella, E. coli, and listeria. So they have some justification. That's still on the CDC site, despite, I think, the current federal administration's fondness for such things as raw milk.
What are some of the other, like Department of Ag, Are they for it, against it? What's
Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, that referred to as IDLES, they have registered as undecided. And they said the bill would appeal to producers involved with the Choose Iowa program. And that's, we've discussed that before when we've talked about the SNAP benefit kerfuffle, and those who want to host farm-to-table events. Yeah.
So you're going to keep an eye on this bill?
Oh, we definitely are. It's because we promote a lot of urban ag for good reason and want to see where this goes.
Thanks, Kathy. And thanks to our guest today, Rekha Basu, and to our production team of Sherry Herdina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, Kathy, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks also to our local business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And thanks also to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. Back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.
Green Acres is the place to be. Farm living is the life for me. Land spreading out so far and wide. Keep Manhattan, just give me that countryside.